Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, the ACC voted on their plan yesterday for a conference-only schedule, and I kind of like the way that they've done this. Basically, they've set it up to where if everything goes to plan, they will play 10 conference games for this year only, add Notre Dame to their conference schedule, and also play one out-of-conference game of the school's choosing. And I think the only caveat to that is if you're going to play an out-of-conference game, it has to be with a team within your state. So kind of that 10-plus-1 model the ACC is going with. And Notre Dame is eligible to play in the ACC championship. No divisions this year in this proposed plan by the ACC. What did you make of the ACC with this decision and kind of the way they're moving forward with this season, if they're able to play this season?
Well, first of all, locally, this really stinks for Middle Tennessee. And it's not like this is a huge surprise. We knew we were kind of heading this way probably, but Virginia Tech was supposed to come in and play at Floyd Stadium, which would have been a great opportunity for them. On a personal level, my brother, Virginia Tech grad, that he is, was planning to come in and go to that game. And it's too bad for Middle Tennessee and Blue Raiders fans. Again, it's not like this is a blindside situation on this. The non-Power 5 schools are just in a tough spot. And as we are seeing here, although there's no announcement yet of the single non-league game for ACC opponents, like you said, it has to be at their home stadiums. The Notre Dame thing's really interesting. First time they could play for a conference championship, and this is one of those creative financial agreements because the ACC is like, hey, you have a sweet TV deal. Can we sort of pool some resources here and get you involved? So if we do get to the point of playing college football, I think it's some cool stuff, some cool games. I mean, I think Florida State at Notre Dame is one of the games that gets added. Notre Dame at North Carolina, which, of course, Mack Brown is recruiting just like a madman right now for the Tar Heels. Clemson going to Virginia Tech. These are some games that are just added because of this change. Miami at Clemson is a new one. I mean, it's the ACC is still Clemson and, you know, it's like Jordan and the Jordanaires, Clemson and everyone else.
Right.
But and then now you go to the SEC, and Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated has reported, you know, that they're very close here on their own conference-only schedule. This, of course, means some really good rivalry games between ACC and SEC that wouldn't happen. So that's too bad. But, I mean, again, I think at this point it's like, will any football happen? And if it's more SEC games, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That could be also interesting. And you're adding some really intriguing matchups there that we weren't going to have in 2020.
And from an ACC standpoint, bringing Notre Dame into the fold makes sense. Not only from what you threw out there with the financial part of it, but also, I mean, Notre Dame plays 6 ACC schools per year anyway. So
yeah, they're a faux ACC member already.
They wanted to keep their kind of independence and, hey, we don't belong to a conference. Now this year, obviously different circumstances.
Yeah, although they got their own TV deal.
Yeah.
And they're never giving that up as long as it's yielding the kind of money it's been yielding. And there's different reports on maybe, you know, it's not as good now as it used to be, but still, your own TV deal? Yeah, it's a sweet deal. But this year is different. So, yeah, imagine that. Notre Dame, all these years, the Big Ten pursued them. I mean, everybody's tried to go get Notre Dame. And all these years, and in this awful pandemic year, Notre Dame playing in a conference championship game among many weird sights.
Yes, very much so. And for an SEC standpoint, the conversation is moving from 8 conference games, obviously, to 10 conference games. And one of the kind of the formats I've seen thrown out there is you'll just get the next two SEC crossover opponents on your schedule. So, like, for Tennessee, for instance, I think their next two would be Ole Miss and LSU, and that would simply be added to the schedule this year. I kind of like that. I mean, if we're going to have college football at all, I'll take as many SEC on SEC games as we can get. Now, I'm not sure how Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee would feel about that, going to play either at LSU or home against LSU. I'm not sure which one it would be, but would be nice to see Lane Kiffin come back in there as head coach. That would be
I think Tennessee,
very interesting.
Oh, yeah. I think Tennessee would love the chance to go beat on Lane Kiffin because they would beat on Lane Kiffin this year. I don't know if they're relishing LSU. I mean, LSU lost a lot of players, but LSU still has a lot of players. Yeah. I think it's – I can check this, but I think it would be at LSU also.
Ooh, that's a tough place to go.
Yeah. Fun.
Fun place.
I mean, the idea of
fried gator in the parking lot.
See, I've not, that's probably number one on my list of places I have not been. Have you been there for a game?
But I've seen some videos and some photos. It looks quite fun.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
But let me ask you this, though, because, you know, we're talking about these conference schedules, and somebody brought this up on Twitter last night, and I think it's at least a point worth considering. If you're a conference like the Big 12 and the SEC, and you feel like you're going to play football, you're going to try to start the season and play football, but you're going to move to a conference-only schedule. That means no games, no Tennessee-Oklahoma game, no Texas-LSU game. If you feel comfortable enough to travel, like if you're Tennessee and you're going to travel to LSU, what's the difference between traveling to LSU and traveling to Oklahoma and playing a game? Like what's the difference at that point?
Yeah.
Other than just the logistical part of saying, hey, we're just going to make this simple and keep our play within conferences.
Yeah, I mean, the uniformity of what you're doing to – I mean, there's a lot of things that just conferences. Clearly, conferences are acting independently of each other here. The Big Ten made their announcement, and everybody was like, what?
Yeah.
It was very early, and that was sort of spun as, well, let's give these teams we're screwing over because we're not giving them the bye games, which helps support their budgets, give them more time. I mean, they're just having more time to sit here and say this stinks, but – so that happened, and now this, you know, I think the ACC's idea has meant to try to maintain some of these. I mean, obviously Clemson, South Carolina can happen, right? But now if
Georgia Tech.
So now the ACC does this, and the SEC is like, we're going conference only. So, but you're right. I mean, it's not like this is all drivable. I mean, if you were going to think about just geography, then you wouldn't do this. You've got, within the SEC, you've got some hefty plane rides. And it's too bad that that Tennessee-Oklahoma game, I was really excited for that game. I know Tennessee fans were excited for that game. And, you know, it's just, there's some great games lost, but it's still, you look at this and you're also like, okay, so is this just kicking the can?
Right.
Are we kicking the can until announcements that aren't exciting to fans happen? I don't know. So I certainly think that's possible.
Yeah, and we talked to Dari Noka of the SEC Network yesterday too, and the sense I get from everyone involved in the college football world is there's not a ton of optimism that this is going to happen, at least happen and be finished as planned. Maybe you have to move it to the spring. Maybe that's the best case scenario. I don't know. I just know that if I'm having to choose between no college football at all and like a 7 or 8 game SEC conference schedule, I'll take it. Go ahead. We'll figure out the playoff mess from there, and it's going to be a disaster, and I'm well aware of that. There are times where it's a disaster every year anyway, but I just need some college football.
Okay, but
so bad.
So if you had the choice right now, Dari Noka talking yesterday about this incredible spring of and possibly – again, college football to me, I'm watching these baseball games, hockey games, and all these sports right now that are happening, I'm okay with no fans. I mean, it's not ideal. It's better to have fans. I still struggle with college football not having fans and bands and cheerleaders. It's just such a big part of it. So if you had the choice right now between this really tenuous schedule I mean, look at Rutgers right now. I know we make fun of Rutgers, but they're part of Power 5 college football. Yeah. Few kids go to one party, and phew. And by the way, students are coming back. I mean, how?
Yeah.
I just don't know how you can feel good about this finishing. So if you had a choice right now between just give it a shot and go into the fall, but know that if it gets halted, you know, now what are you going to do? Or just say, hey, kick it to the spring. Maybe we'll be able to deal with the virus better. You know you're going to lose a lot of really good NFL prospects, though.
My gut reaction to that is move it to the spring, just because, you know, I don't necessarily mind playing college football in the spring, even though you know you're going to lose some players. At least we've got college football, and maybe you've got a better chance at that point to get the thing completed. But also, I mean, we thought back in April, by now, we might be in a pretty good situation to play college football. We could be in the exact same situation in the spring. So then at that point, what do you do? I mean, you've got to at least try it at some point. Like, what do you do at that point?
Well, there's – yeah. If it ends up being you just got to wait, I don't think it – well, I don't know if it doesn't matter, but I think in a wide range of scenarios, they're going to try in the spring.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they will try.
Yeah. Almost have
to. So, like, anybody who's a college football fan, it's your number one sport, they're going to try to play it this year. Just don't know when. And I'm leaning more towards spring as a sensible option, too.
When we come back, Major League Baseball announced an interesting suspension yesterday that's got Munson very fired up. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Predators president and CEO Sean Henry will join us at 7:30, so very much looking forward to that and catching up with our buddy Sean. But first, there is something that has really set Munson off. I mean, MLB came out yesterday and announced they have suspended LA Dodgers pitcher Joe Kelly 8 games for throwing at the Astros on Tuesday night and the actions that took place in Houston. And my first reaction to that was, okay, you suspended a guy 8 games. And remember, we're in a 60-game season. 8 games is a pretty significant chunk of games. For throwing at, and not hitting, throwing at a group of players that have been caught cheating that you did not punish in the slightest. I understand that you can't have, if you're the MLB, pitchers out there just taking liberties and throwing at people's heads. I get that. I understand that. But it is also an awful look to suspend a guy 8 games for throwing at players who were caught cheating that you did nothing about. It's just a bad look.
Joe Kelly just should have cheated.
He should have.
Just cheat.
Well,
he kind of.
He might have.
Well, that's true.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Perhaps.
With the Red Sox.
No, I think it's a bad look. I have to look at this and say that Rob Manfred is like, this has to be a league-wide deterrent. Like, I got to bring the hammer right now or the whole season's going to be who's, you know, it's like the carnival dunking booth. Okay, it's your turn to throw at an Astro. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, but I'm bad at math. But 8 out of 60 games. So I think if you – okay, I'm not gonna claim this math for my own. I think I read this. I think it's that would be a 22-game suspension.
Yeah. It's the equivalent of a 21-game suspension.
20, 21, 22. I mean, come on.
It's ridiculous.
So picture this. Imagine being like Odor, who punched Jose Bautista right in the face, making his chain spin around his neck.
One of the greatest moments in baseball.
One of the greatest
history moments.
He got suspended 8 games for that in a regular season. He got suspended 8 games for punching a dude in the face. But this dude, he sucks as a pitcher, and all he does is throw it over people's heads, and all of a sudden he gets 8 games. And not to mention the fact, David Roberts got suspended for 1 game.
Yeah. I think Dusty Baker got fined. Like, what did Dusty Baker get fined for?
He got, I guess, for arguing with the umpires. But Dave Roberts got suspended a game, even though the Dodgers still won that game. So whatever. But still, it's not the point. 8 games for throwing at someone. Like, come on. I understand. Like, you warned the guy. You warned him first and foremost. I don't think they warned the Dodgers. I think they mostly warned the Astros about this whole, like, hey. You guys might want to be careful in these games. Just saying. But You suspend a guy 8 games for throwing at a pitcher or a batter that happens all the time in this league. And I'm not condoning Joe Kelly throwing at people's heads. That's uncalled for. Like, but I just think he's so bad of a pitcher that he aimed for something else, and it just automatically just went over their heads because he was just that bad that inning.
The one he threw at Correa was a breaking ball. Like, I think he was up like 3-0 in the count. He threw a breaking ball at him. It wasn't even a fastball. It's just crazy.
He's just bad. He's just bad at throwing bad pitches. Like, that's all it is. He's the worst. But that doesn't defeat the purpose of like suspending him for 8 games. That's, come on, man. MLBs, man, they're just like, part of me was like, you know what, MLB, to hell with you. I'm gonna go watch something else. Like, why am I watching your sport anyway? Like, you guys don't know what you're doing over here. You don't even know how to suspend people correctly. You don't know how to schedule games. You don't know how to handle COVID. You don't know how to handle suspensions. Like, what do you know how to do correctly?
Well, maybe besides
anger me.
They're very good at that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you do hate Joe Kelly, so at least you can kind of, right?
I don't hate Joe Kelly. He's just
you don't like
bad.
This on principle, but you're not going to be begging for Joe Kelly as you're watching Dodgers games.
No, yeah. I'm not. But yeah. I understand. It's the point of you're suspending a guy for 8 games for doing something that, guess what, everybody does every single year when they have beef with someone. We've seen it. I didn't see Bryce Harper get punched in the face because he doesn't know how to fight, run out of mound for a pitcher hitting him. So we've seen this every single year in baseball, but now all of a sudden it's the Astros, and you knew this was going to happen, and you warned everybody, like, hey, let's keep it positive here, you know. No. They cheated.
Yeah.
And yeah, Joe Kelly shouldn't throw at their heads, but guess what? They're going to get their punishment for it. If you're not going to do it, the players are going to do it. And guess what? They're doing it.
Well, and
because you didn't know how to suspend them.
It goes back to the players involved with the Astros got no punishment. Now, I understand why they got no punishment, because basically they had to offer the players what's equivalent to a free pardon to get all the information out that eventually led to this scandal being uncovered in the first place. So I understand that, and that's a big part of why they got players to talk. But still, you have to, at least at some point, if you're Rob Manfred in the MLB, be aware of the optics of what you're doing. Because I'm not saying that Joe Kelly deserved no punishment whatsoever, but 8 games in a 60-game season is a pretty severe price, and you couple that with the fact that the players involved that he's throwing at, quote-unquote throwing at, they cheated their way to a World Series and got off scot-free. I mean, come on.
Well, you mentioned optics. I think that's what this is. And it may be a wrong-headed, you know, way to think about it, but I think Rob Manfred really does not want the Astros, the cheating, and the retribution to be the dominant story in baseball. So he's like, you know what? I'm hammering the heck out of whoever does it first, and you all better watch this and stop. Now, maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. But I think that's got to be it, because it's excessive. I mean, seriously, think about that. Imagine a pitcher throwing at someone and getting a 20-plus game suspension for it.
And not hitting them. That's the main thing.
Now, and I think ball placement is part of this here, whether it's because he's Nuke LaLoosh or he actually went there. But these were high. And I guess you're right. One of those may have been a breaking ball. Those still
Bregman
hurt.
Was a heater.
But, yeah, that was a heater at the head. And if we're going to talk about Astros and Astros fans, people may remember Dickie Thon. I mean, that can be a real bad situation. But that's got to be that. It's got to be probably before he knew who it would be. Rob Manfred's like, first person is going to get nailed, and I'll go overboard so this doesn't – because baseball doesn't want people to talk about the cheating Astros all year. They've got 60 games, and they're trying to – you know, they want people to talk about baseball.
I understand, but what he's done by doing that is make it a conversation again. Because, look, what team had the biggest problem with the Astros and what they did? The Dodgers. So get through this series with the Dodgers. My guess is in a 60-game season – with games mattering as much as they matter, teams other than the Dodgers probably not going to waste a whole lot of time throwing at their heads because they're trying to win. Like, you got 60 games to get in the playoffs. So, Yes, I agree. Maybe what part of Manfred's thinking was, I'm going to crack down hard on this so this doesn't become a thing. But you've effectively made it a thing by coming down this hard on it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, don't take this as – yeah, this is not praise for Rob Manfred. I mean, he's
Rob Manfred's a dummy.
In the commissioner rankings, I don't know. Is he top – does he make the top 100?
No, he doesn't. He does not. He's awful. He's the worst. And it's just – look, if you don't want to make the Astros a story and you – and I understand you don't want them to be the dominant story, you know how you can avoid that? By having a punishment for a team that did it. Don't – like, I'm going to take $5 million from a Houston franchise. Wow, okay. So $5 million, big whoop. That's like LeBron getting fined $100,000 for doing something. Like, yeah, okay. I'll take it out of my
shoe
kids
after the game. Yeah,
I'll take it out of my shoe. I'll have Rich Paul write you a check, and then we can just move on. Like it's ridiculous. And
you wanted them relegated, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
That could have been a year of relegation for the Astros.
Relegation.
See, everything should
must
be like
go play in double.
I wanted
European soccer.
Like give them a postseason ban or something. They do it in college. They do it in college when you take money. Or you're like Reggie Bush and driving a Hummer through Los Angeles. Yeah. They take a championship from you, or they'll give you a postseason ban. Why can't they do it here in this situation? You know why? Because Rob Manfred is a dummy. That's why. And he has no logic. And this is the reason why he came up with a dumb suspension like this. Because he's like, you know what? I need to crack down on this. I'm going to give him a 21-game suspension. That'll show him. And then Joe Kelly goes on Instagram and paints their pictures on his kids' faces and then says, free Joe Kelly. Like,
oh, really?
Yes,
oh,
yeah. He did. It was great.
We need to have one segment per show that just gets Munson fired up. I like it. I like fired up Munson. It's good. Yeah.
Just grinds my gears, man. Rob Manfred, you be like Adam Silver, man. I love Adam Silver. I like Gary Bettman. You know, I like those two guys. I like Don Garber. I like those guys. I don't like Roger.
You're not ready to go to Roger Goodell.
No, Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell's got a few seasons to show me a little bit. He can do better. But he's on the bottom of the list right now. As far as commissioners, he's at the bottom of the list.
When we come back, our good friend Sean Henry, Predators president and CEO, will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, it's been way too long since we've been able to talk to our next guest. We bring in our good friend, Sean Henry, Predators president and CEO. Sean, what's going on, my man?
Well, I'm sitting over here all hurt. I thought I was being brought on to launch your first show in the return of the airwaves, only to find out it's your fourth show.
Well,
what the heck,
that
man?
Means you're batting cleanup.
Yeah, I mean, you're a baseball guy.
Thank you. Speaking of baseball, let's do an hour on Joe Kelly, who is my new favorite baseball player.
I know, right? Do you ever think you would say that about a former Red Sox?
Or a Dodger. I mean, yeah. Honestly, you know, three of the four teams I hate more than anything in the world. But, wow.
Joe Kelly.
I did the right thing.
Sean, we have hockey returning today for the Nashville Predators, and we'll get into all the stuff around the bubble and everything going on in the NHL a little bit later on. But just to say those words makes me so happy to have hockey coming back today, and I'm sure it does you as well.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, and we all feel that way. And obviously, I like hockey the most. I think you do too, or I hope so, and I know Joe does. But I felt the same way, you know, the first time we saw any sporting event, you know, when it launched. And it's cool to see it because, you know, sports can do a lot of cool things, you know, for a community when we're all hurting, bring us together, give us something to do. But there's also another aspect of it. You know, we're almost a Petri dish of maybe a way that we can, you know, reopen certain things, and we'll have some failures and successes. But I think what we see in our bubble anyway right now, knock on wood, you know, there are ways that we can kind of safely reopen slowly and get us to a point where we're getting vaccines going first quarter next year, ideally.
Now, Sean, obviously you guys and the Coyotes are going to be playing against each other on the ice. It's going to be intense, all that. But the partnership you guys are doing off the ice I think is really cool, including a puppy pet drive competition between my guy Smash, the Predators team dog, and Arizona's team dog Luna in a competition to benefit local animal shelters. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'll tell you, whenever we have a chance to partner with another team in the height, you know, heat anyway of the playoffs, you like to do it. And I think the first time that we did it pretty well was during the floods in St. Louis when we were playing them back in, I guess it was 2017, that our fans kind of responded. We turned the proceeds of the smash car over to their flood victims. Then we challenged them to some dual fundraising. And as fun and as heat as I can get on the ice or rooting for our team or they're rooting for their team, it shows the commonality between both organizations and the fan bases. If we can use that quote-unquote rivalry or the attention the games get, you know, to change some things around, you want to do it. And, you know, they have a brand new CEO who, you know, I've been talking to quite a bit, you know, since he got, you know, named the job, welcome to the league. And he's just one of those real dynamic guys that immediately saw the opportunity to partner to do something a little bit bigger than just play the games. And don't get me wrong, when I say just play the games, I'm pretty excited about just playing the games. And, but it is always nice to be able to, you know, link arms with the people you compete with on the ice, but you don't compete with in the office or in the community.
Yeah, and Sean, another one of those partnerships that you guys are doing with the Coyotes is hosting a joint blood drive from August 4th through August 7th. And as we know, I mean, having a blood drive now in the last few months has been really challenging with blood shortages because of coronavirus-related cancellations. This is a really important opportunity for people on August 4th through August 7th.
Yeah, it really is. And it was one of the first things that we did when we went into the pause or, you know, kind of the self-isolation, because we had our normal blood drive scheduled. We normally did, I don't know, I think it's 60 or 70 people before a game at a blood drive, but our game was canceled and therefore our blood drive was, and we realized, wait a minute, we need to do something. So we did the Preds blood drive within Nashville, and I think we did three or four different centers, and we had, I don't know, 300 or 400 people go out and give blood, much needed. Because, you know, a lot of people were concerned, how can I do it? Where can I do it safely? So, you know, we took the success of that, and now we're doing it through all of Smashville, you know, from Memphis to Huntsville to Bowling Green to Chattanooga, Knoxville, and everywhere in between. And then to have Arizona do the same exact thing, because their market's a lot like ours geographically. It's so large. And again, using the attention the game brings us, the passion our fans have for our logos, to bring in something that's so needed. It's important. But from a fan standpoint, you know, it's always good to give just for the sake of giving, but you're throwing on two other layers with this. You're going to get the antibody antibody test with your blood. So when it's tested, you'll know if you had it, and then you'll know if you can give plasma to help other people as they struggle through recovery of COVID. And then also you get a chance to win some pretty cool prizes from the Preds and the Coyotes in their market.
So, Sean, from your perspective, go back 4.5 months, SEC tournament to now, hockey coming back. What have these 4.5 months been like for you, you know, maybe personally but also professionally? How much of a challenge has this been?
Well, yeah, I think, like you, it's been surreal. You know, when we went to that pause and, you know, we announced that we were canceling the SEC tournament and the season was on pause, we all thought it was going to be for 2-3 days, 2 or 3 weeks. None of us even thought it was going to be 2 or 3 months. You fast forward to where we're sitting right now, 4.5 months in, and it really has been pretty amazing what I think a lot of companies have done and rediscovered about themselves and kind of got back to some core values, and that's what it's been for us. You know, we had a chance to kind of reestablish better bonds, deeper bonds with groups of people we have a great relationship with already, but we're re-entrenched, and I think they did with us. And our relationship with our season ticket holders, with our fans, with our partners, with our premium holders, and then, of course, our own employees, I think are deeper today than they ever have been. And that should pay dividends, you know, for a long, long time. And from a personal standpoint, I think it's kind of microcosm of the same, and I hope it's the same for you guys, too. You get a chance to spend a little bit different types of time with your family, and that's been really nice. I mean, it's important to find those silver linings. It's easy to complain and, you know, find all the negatives that we're faced with right now. But the upside for us as an organization, build better relationships. And from a personal standpoint, you know, we're doing things as a family that we just haven't done in a long, long time. We always try to eat together, but now we shop together, we cook together, we play games together, you know, different movie nights, different nights a week. Every night's a theme night. You know, tonight with the Preds game, of course, after our game, we're going to have blue and gold burgers and wings because we're going to fly through the playoffs. But every night is fun like that, and I hope the same is for everyone listening, too. You got to find the positives, and if you do, you're going to be able to ride them long after we're past the pandemic.
Predators president and CEO Sean Henry on the line with us. And Sean, I watched what's been happening in Edmonton and Toronto and the bubble sites and everything the NHL has done. And I've just kind of been blown away with how successful it's been, not only from a testing perspective, but just how smoothly everything seems to be operating thus far. What's been your opinion on the bubble sites the NHL has put together in Edmonton and Toronto?
Well, knock on wood, as you said, what you just did, because you want that smoothness to continue. But yeah, I've been fortunate. I've been sitting in front row, being able to be a part of what's going to get created, what's being built. And it's one thing to see it on paper or theory or in meetings or conference calls. It's a whole nother to see it created in real life. And I think the sight lines and the looks are so cool, very, very different than maybe some other sports. You know, what we're doing with our guys, the first goal was to protect everyone around the game. You know, everyone putting the games together and putting them on, those that are facilitating hospitality in Edmonton and Toronto, and then, of course, for our own staff and players. And we also knew we had to break up some monotony, you know, for the guys. We wanted to make sure we had some small touches from home, and I think each team is doing their own thing. You know, for us, it was throwing up a couple of billboards that the guys would see en route to the practice facility, putting pictures of the players' families and kids and parents in that room. There are going to be, you know, more of those little surprises throughout the way. But I'm just so happy, you know, we're there, first of all. And to date, we've had no issues. And I think if we maintain these protocols and procedures, you know, we're going to be able to have a really fun run through the playoffs.
Sean, I say this on my, I think, eighth coffee of the morning. I learned yesterday, you know, first of all, we learned this week, free Tim Hortons in the Edmonton bubble, which is amazing. And John Hines was talking about that the other day. But I learned yesterday, David Poile does not drink coffee. He is not taking advantage of this. This is stunning news to me. Did you know this?
You know, when you spend as much time with David Poile as I do, I know more about him than I should. but I, too, am about my eighth cup of coffee because I get up about 4:30 this morning with my dogs, just excited about the day. But Dave was funny. He said, I'm tempted to go get some Tim Hortons because it's free. Because the one thing, you know, David doesn't drink coffee. He loves chocolate. But he also likes free things. So he's in quite a dilemma right now. But, yeah, it's those little things that are kind of fun. You know, David did send me a picture from his room looking down on Tim Hortons' truck. And as you know, you give free things to, you know, guys around our game, and you're going to have a pretty long line. You know, it looked like a Russian bread line in the 70s.
Sean, last thing for you here. It's been a pretty good start to the season for your Yankees. Is this the year that they get it done and win the World Series?
I just hope we get to a World Series. I mean, like with all sports coming back, I was so excited to see baseball come back, you know, like you guys. I mean, you're just a fan. And I won't lie to you. I've been a bigger fan. I want to watch every Astros game just to see what could happen. But, you know, we know what the Yankees are. You know, if we don't win the World Series, it's a failed season. And that's what makes everyone hate us as fans and them as a team. But I'm pretty excited about this lineup. I don't understand, you know, where guys are batting and why. I mean, I don't know if Justice has ever batted second in a consistent basis in his life. You know, he probably looks at the lineup card and thinks the manager's dyslexic. thinking, what am I doing batting second? But you know what? It seems to be working a little bit. And our newly acquired ace pitcher, he's 2-0, so you can't ask for more than that, I don't think. I just wish we get a chance to play every game, though. And I hope that's the case for all sports returning.
Absolutely. Predators president and CEO Sean Henry has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Sean, thanks so much for joining us, my friend. And can't wait to have hockey back, Nashville Predators hockey back today against the Dallas Stars. Thanks, man.
Well, guys, thank you so much and welcome back. I'm so enjoying your show, and I'm just happy you invited me on.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Sean. 3 o'clock. Tune in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you. When we come back, a very concerning situation going on right now with the Tennessee Titans and Vic Beasley. We'll get into that next. How concerned are we? That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders on with Jared and the GM yesterday talking about the Vic Beasley situation, Joe, that is becoming really, really strange. We're 2 days into camp officially starting now, and not only has Vic Beasley not reported to Titans camp, nobody on the Titans really seems to have any clue as to where he is or what he's doing. Just a really weird situation and, quite honestly, kind of a concerning situation going on with Vic Beasley.
I'll be honest with you, the biggest news I've received today was from you earlier when you said he liked a tweet, because it's been silence on the Vic Beasley front. It's very strange, because it's supposed to be $50K a day, for one thing. I mean, if he was going to opt out, then go ahead. You know, I mean, that's, and the opt out period actually is 7 days after everything is, you know, signed and sealed on the protocol. So it's still more than a week away. But no contact is weird. And for me, sort of trying to find out what's going on, I'm getting back just sort of a shrug at this point. And that's strange. We talked about, is he mad about, like, Clowney? Is he afraid of, is it a COVID-related? There's a lot of, in Atlanta, a lot of talk of, I guess, and there has been before, does Vic Beasley want to play football anymore? Does he love football? And if that's what it is, you know, for one thing, that's something I think that you need to really investigate if you're John Robinson before you sign someone, too, because obviously he hasn't been the same player since 2016 when he helped them get to the Super Bowl, led the NFL in sacks. Kind of came back last year, but I don't know. I think today we're going into this day and it's like, all right, is he showing up for his COVID test or isn't he? But it's unprofessional and strange to me that you wouldn't have any contact at this point.
That's the crazy part. Like Chris Sanders said it there in the clip, like things happen sometimes. We all know that things happen in our own lives, but you got to let somebody know. Like nobody can just read your mind and figure out what's going on in your life. So, you know, Chris Sanders was talking yesterday. I was listening to his interview with Jared, and he was like legitimately concerned that something may be wrong with Vic Beasley. They could be going through something, and I don't know, maybe he is, but it's just strange to me that no one has been able to get in contact with him. That is concerning. There was the thing on Twitter where he did like a tweet. It's from a day ago, which I think by Twitter's timeline is actually 2 days ago now. So I don't really know what's going on there, but just a really strange situation. And it's not like you're coming into camp and you're having to just like bust it already, go work out on the field and go through practice in the heat all the time. Like they're not really doing anything at the moment because of COVID-19 and the way this training camp is going to be set up. So it's just really strange. Like there's nothing to really be kind of dreading going to camp for at this moment other than maybe a COVID reason. But if that's the reason, just tell somebody. Like you have the opportunity to opt out.
Well, yeah, and maybe you're not sure, which is fine too. You know, you're weighing your options, but it's just a matter of communication. And yeah, the Derrick Henry thing, I'd forgotten about that. I think that was OTAs or mini camp. It was a spring thing, so that's also different. And yeah, apparently he was going to school. I think in fact I believe that day like Jarrell Casey said something like, you know, we're taking note of who's not here, and it became a thing. But that was a one-day thing and just a little bit of a miscommunication. I think if this keeps going, you really wonder where it's going. And for people who are wondering, you know, if he ends up not playing and the contract's voided out, then I believe the Falcons would lose a fifth-round compensatory pick. The Titans would gain one, but it doesn't do a lot of good for you this year when pass rush is the number one thing you're trying to locate.
Yeah, no question about it. We'll continue to monitor the Vic Beasley situation very closely. Joe, I do want to touch on the NFL 100 list very quickly because we've talked about it the last couple of days. Derrick Henry does end up in the top 10. He is number 10 on the list of the NFL 100 that the players put together. I believe one of two running backs in the top 10, Christian McCaffrey of the Carolina Panthers, finishes at number 6. So number 10 in the NFL, not bad for Derrick Henry. I think that's about right.
Yeah, it's nice to see. So we can rip on NFL players and some of their choices. And I will say, Patrick Mahomes, number 4. I was a little surprised by that.
There are two quarterbacks ahead of Patrick Mahomes. I mean, come on.
You got Lamar Jackson as the number 1 overall.
And Russell Wilson is 2.
And then Russell Wilson, 2.
I like both of those guys. Neither one of those guys are better than Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. But I'll give NFL players credit for not buying into devaluing the running back thing, because if you have a great one, then that could be great for your team, even if it's a short period of time. So that's cool for Derrick Henry to get that recognition, honestly, and for the Titans. When's the last time the Titans – I don't even know how long they've been doing this thing. But, every year we talk about it. It becomes a talking point. These lists sometimes get more attention than they should. But when would the last time the Titans would have had a top 10 guy in the league be? I mean, maybe Chris. Yeah, I don't think so. Chris Johnson at his peak?
Maybe.
10 years ago?
Yeah.
9 years ago? But I think Derrick Henry is that good.
I'll tell you.
He's coming off that postseason. You know, a lot of people took notice.
One of the biggest surprises to me on the list, and this is local Nashville resident in the offseason, George Kittle, ends up at number 7 on the list, which not only is the best spot for a tight end in the league right now, it's the highest spot ever by a tight end on this list, even higher than Gronk was when he was number 9 in 2016. Are you kind of surprised that, number one, I don't know if Kittle's really good. Don't get me wrong. Is he the best tight end in the league? I'd probably put Travis Kelce ahead of George Kittle.
I might, too. Kittle's great, but either way, 7 for Kittle in the whole league? Yeah, it seems a little high to me. By the way, you said in the history, do you know how far it goes back? Like how long
it does not say,
this?
But it does say that it's the highest spot ever claimed by a tight end, and Gronk was the previous high at number 9 in 2016. So, you know, 2016, Gronk was still good. Peak Gronk was, 2014, 2015? So maybe the list wasn't around then. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Antonio Gates in, 2006.
Tony Gonzalez,
Yeah, right. I mean, you're talking about best ever for tight end. Mark Bavaro, 1986. How about that? There's a little one for Sean Henry, New York Giants fan. I don't think it goes back too far, but – yeah, Kittle at 7, that's a little surprising. 2 running backs at top 10, good for the running backs.
Good for the running backs. Christian McCaffrey, tell you what, he's the do-it-all guy
for the
Panthers. Like, how much stock, like, Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson over Mahomes? Like, who's making this list?
Well, I will
say. How is Mahomes not number one?
I will say, though, that, you know, with Lamar Jackson, you know, I understand NFL players saying, look, that guy has as big an arm as anyone.
Sure.
He's an unbelievable runner with the football. I fear him more than anyone. But someone was tweeting out lists and players had like Mahomes down low in their top 10 and stuff. And it's like,
ridiculous.
Yeah, I think you're a little bit downgrading the guy. He's the best passer in the league.
And it's really not even close at the moment. Just the way it is.
Yeah. He'll take the contract over ranking number 1 on the player list.
Patrick Mahomes also now part owner of the Kansas City Royals. So already investing that money.
There you go.
Good for him. When we come back, our good friend John Glennon of Broadway Sports will join us. We're looking forward to that. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.